Holy cow, so much happened across Major League Baseball this weekend. Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Monday, March 24th. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on X at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball. On X as well. Fix my audio real quick. There we go. And holy cow, Troy, so much happened this weekend across Major League Baseball. We're going to get to the White Sox breaking every arm in camp. We're going to get to Vlad Guerrero might still get extended. We're going to get to prospects making the opening day roster, extensions, all of that kind of stuff. Let's start with the prospects, actually. Yeah. The Red Sox are promoting Christian Campbell for opening day. He's not on the 40-man roster. They have to make a spot for him. They've got so many injuries. I'm sure somebody can be put on the 60-day. But this is something where he beat out Vaughn Grissom. He beat out David Hamilton for the second base job. Hamilton's still going to have a roster spot. He's a lefty hitter. Campbell's a righty, I think. But still, this is something. Campbell was a 2023 fourth-round draft pick. And in just over a year in professional baseball, he worked his way up into pretty much kind of a consensus top five prospect in baseball, right? Baseball America had him number 4. The MLB Pipeline had him number 7. So top 10 prospect in baseball. Is this a smart idea for the Red Sox to go ahead and put him in the show this early? Or is this one of those, like, what in the Los Angeles Angels are you doing?
it is quick. It is quick. And we have seen prospects and specifically collegiate athletes make their way through the minor league systems into the major league level very quickly over the past few years, a lot quicker over the past few years than we have seen over the many decades. But I do like this one. I think that Christian Campbell is probably ready for the major leagues. He might have a little bit of trouble the first couple weeks, might have a slow start over the first couple weeks, just adjusting, getting fully adjusted to that major league level of pitching. But again, he is one of those top prospects. He's one of the Red Sox big three guys in their farm system. And I don't think it's going to be too long before we see Roman Anthony up either. I think he'll be up sooner rather than later. And then in a few months, we'll see Marcelo Meyer, and all three of them will be raking at the big league level.
Yeah. I think the issue you have with Anthony is right now, even with Masataka Yoshida started the year on the IL, you just don't have any outfield spots. But spots will always open up, right? Somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody's going to be ineffective, and they'll have a chance to do something. The thing for Campbell is just how quickly he went through the minors last year. Started off in high A, which you see a lot of times from those college bats. 40 games in high A, hit .306. 56 games in double A, hit .362. He got better in double A. Goes to triple A Worcester, 19 games, .286. So, you know, not the same level, but triple A. It does feel like a risk, though, given that he has less than 20 games in triple A and you're throwing him into the majors. We'll see how it goes, but obviously very exciting. He is a guy, it is worth pointing out, he does have experience in the outfield as well. He's not just a second baseman. He's also in the minors. He played 25 games in center. He played some right. He played some left. He's played some third base. And so, you know, he has played shortstop as well. He can move around a lot of different positions. I don't think you want him as an everyday shortstop, but he is a guy that you can use all over. So even if, like you have a set lineup now with him at second, but if you need him to cover third for a game or short for a game or whatever, you can do that. And I think that always helps. The question is going to be, to your point, the adjustments there. Let's stay in the division, I guess. Baltimore, two interesting bits of news. I'm trying to pull it up over here. The first one is they are extending catcher Alejandro Kirk. 5 years, $58 million. There is no deferred money in the deal.
Toronto.
The deal Baltimore. Starts. Do what?
Toronto, not Baltimore.
I'm sorry. Oh my gosh. Did I say Baltimore?
You did.
I'm sorry. When would Baltimore ever give a person more money than they have to?
Right. Exactly.
Toronto. Yeah. Toronto. 4.6. Yeah. But $58 million. And the deal starts next year. So he's making $4.6 million this year. And then he will, the new deal kicks in next year. He'll hit free agency after his age 31 season. Is this is like a win-win for everybody involved, right? He gets some financial security. They get his prime years and they're not stuck with the JT Realmuto type back half of his prime into his decline years, giving him a huge salary. And they're never really paying a huge salary on this entire thing, just given the fact that he's been so good in his career.
Yeah. I think this works out for both sides, like you said, because they're locking up one of their younger guys, getting his prime years, one of the main pieces of their offense, and having him under control. And it could be a good sign for other things moving forward. But it is funny though. Whenever you texted me this the tweet about him being extended, I was at the grocery store yesterday morning, and I texted you back. I said they extended the wrong player, But no, this does work out for both sides. I like this extension. I like Alejandro Kirk. I think he's a good offensive catcher, and I like that he's going to be sticking around in Toronto, giving them a little more star power for a few more years.
I haven't looked at the roster, but I'm going to assume that there's nobody in alphabetical order between the G for Guerrero and the K for Kirk, and they just clicked the wrong drop down when they submitted the contract. Right. Although if you got Vlad on that little money, that'd be amazing. Speaking of Vlad, though, JCEO Mark Shapiro said, this was late last week, we missed this when it came out, that he expects to, like, quote, I think we're going to extend him. Vlad said his deadline was the first day of spring training, but he left the door open, saying he wasn't going to negotiate any further, but he'd be amenable to hearing out the Jays if they present a new offer. Given how far they were reportedly apart, the Jays were said to offer something like $500 million, but when you factor the deferred money, it was more like $450 million. Guerrero supposedly wanted a net value, like present value of $500 million. Do we think that they will bridge this gap sometime soon, or is he going to free agency this winter?
It's gonna be tough, especially because I did see another quote of his from last week where he said that, depending on his play this year, he could be at Juan Soto levels of contract status. And I don't think he'll be that close or that high of a figure. I mean, he could get a lot of money. It's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's been pretty good throughout his career. But I don't think he's going to get $765 million. But I think the 500 is a lot closer. I don't see them coming to an agreement on an extension during the season. I think he is going to free agency, and I think that he is going to be pretty much the opposite of Pete Alonso. I think that him betting on himself is going to work. I don't think it's going to come back to bite him, because he brings more to the table than Pete Alonso does. And so I think that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. going to free agency is going to be the best course of action for him moving forward.
Yeah, and I do think, I think you're right there. Since that 2021 season where he was so good, he's hit .293. Like, it's not bad. You'll take that, right? On base of like .370, stuff like that. I do think it's an interesting question if they don't extend him. Do they try to trade him at the deadline? We've talked about the AL East might be the most loaded division in baseball. You know, top to bottom, right? I do think the NL East teams are all better than the best teams in the AL East, but the AL East might have four or five contenders, whereas the NL East has two to three, depending on how you feel about the Mets. And our feelings are pretty well known about about.
I'm a hater, man. I don't think you want to ask me that. I am a hater, so I'm going to just leave it at that.
And, hey. You know, and yeah, I wonder if they're 10 games out of a wild card or 10 games out of first place and 5 games out of a wild card spot at the deadline. Do they move Guerrero and Bichette to try to get more than just the draft pick you would get for a qualifying offer? It's something to think about. I do think if you're Toronto, you need to do that. I just don't think they will, because they're under this idea that they are, in fact, World Series contenders, when I feel like they're a tier below that. And they have a lot of contracts expiring the next year or two. Like, this is the middle of a competitive window for them. And the fact that they didn't even like make the postseason last year is embarrassing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm right there with you. I do think that, I think especially with all the injuries that the Yankees have had this spring and the, how depleted their roster is, that the American League East is a lot more open. So I think it's, I do like the idea that he could be traded at the deadline. I think that would make the trade deadline extremely exciting. But I don't think they're going to do it. I agree with you. I think that they think they're World Series contenders when they're really not. But I do think that because of how the American League East is so much more open this year, I think they are playoff contenders. Honestly, I talked about it when we previewed them. I think they were playoff contenders anyway, even with the Yankees having the roster that they did. But especially with the Yankees being depleted, they're definitely playoff contenders. And for those Mets fans who don't like it, that we are haters for them.
At the end of the day, if you don't like it, play better.
You got me that time. You got me. You don't like it, play better, Mets. There you go. Wrapping up the East, both East real quick. We got news on two different East division pitchers starting on the IL. Your Phillies, Ranger Suarez, began the season on the injured list with that bad back, meaning that Taijuan Walker, your favorite player in baseball, is who do you love more, Taijuan Walker or Byron Buxton? Anyway, don't answer that. We don't have time. We can't get in trouble for you cursing. Taijuan Walker is going to be in the rotation. And the flip side, Shane McClanahan, who left his start on Friday, and it looked bad.
Yeah.
When he like grabbed his arm and called for the trainer immediately. Turns out it's a nerve problem in his triceps area. He'll be on the 15-day IL to start the year, so he's not making the opening day start. Ryan Pepiot will instead. But he should not miss too much time is the thought, right? The belief is that he's not going to miss too much time. Which of those is potentially a bigger deal? McClanahan, a more important pitcher, missing less time, or Suarez possibly missing, you know, a couple weeks or months maybe?
Yeah, I think that this does... I think it's McClanahan, and I think that the reason it is because of how, again, how open the American League East is, and the Rays, he is the best pitcher on the Rays staff, and without him, even for a couple of weeks, that could, even though he pitches once every fifth day or whatever it is, that it could still dig a pretty big hole for them in that division pretty early in the season, especially if it does wind up being more than just a couple of weeks, because we've seen Shane McClanahan's injury history over his career. It's pretty extensive. And so
coming back from Tommy John right now was the big concern was that he retore it or something. And it turns out we were okay, but that was scary.
Yeah, exactly. And so I do think that the more detrimental is the Shane McClanahan, especially because while Taijuan Walker is quite literally the worst pitcher in the history of baseball, the Phillies do have four other guys in that rotation who three of them are aces and one of them is the best number two pitcher pitching out of the number four hole in the rotation. So it's missing out on Ranger Suarez isn't going to be as detrimental to the Phillies as Shane McClanahan to the Rays.
There you go. Okay. Additions in the East. Well, we're not actually done with the East. I thought we were. The Atlanta Braves added 41-year-old reliever Jesse Chavez on his seventh stint with the organization over the weekend, and then the next day turned around and traded starter Ian Anderson to the Los Angeles Angels. Anderson was out of options. He walked 20 in 20 innings this spring, and so they threw him onto the Angels, and they replaced him with lefty reliever Jose Suarez, who's also out of options. How not surprising was Jesse Chavez joining the Braves?
Yeah, it's crazy. I everybody knew it was coming, but then when it actually happened, it was still like, oh my God, it actually
is still hilarious.
Yeah, it's crazy how just it's the Braves and Jesse Chavez, man. He's going to be spending the rest of his career there. Even if he does start a year with another team, he's going to finish out the year with the Atlanta Braves because it's just meant to be, apparently. And that's where he pitches his best with the Atlanta Braves. And so I just, I don't know. I don't know why y'all don't just extend him every year instead of, which I mean, it's worked out. Y'all
it's
trade
cheaper
him
this way. It's my deals. It's the league minimum. It's cheaper like this. Somebody else pays him to get ready in spring training. They cut him in spring and you add him and then you're good. Like you're offloading the cost onto somebody else. It was the White Sox last year. It was the Rangers the year before that. Like, what can you do?
Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, Jesse Chavez is back and Ian Anderson is gone. Just steal your joke. It's in with the old and out with the new. So
I forgot. Honestly, the whole idea behind trading Ian Anderson for Jose Suarez is now the Atlanta Braves can DFA Jose Suarez in 3 weeks and nobody's going to be mad about it. Whereas if you DFA'd Ian Anderson on Sunday, people were going to be sad because of how like what he did in the postseason. I mean, Ian Anderson, the quintessential Ian Anderson experience was game three of the 2021 World Series. I was there. Five innings, no hits, no runs, but three walks and a hit batter. like four base runners, but did not allow a hit. He has a career 1.26 ERA in eight postseason starts.
Wow.
Yeah. He's also walked 17 in 35 innings in the postseason. Like the Ian Anderson experience. And again, in spring, he walked 20 in 20 innings. He only struck out 10. He only allowed five runs. Right, it was an ERA of 2.25, but it was a WHIP of 1.4. You know, it came out to something like a 20-something percent walk rate and like a 10-something percent strikeout rate. It'd be iffy the other way around, but especially right. This. So he has a chance now to start every fifth day as he's coming back from Tommy John with the Angels, try to get back into form. If it works out for him over there, great. If not, he's not going to be the reason the Angels don't make the postseason this year. Like, that's... That was the whole idea behind this trade. And again, Jose Suarez, there's a couple things you can do to try to fix him. I talked about this on today's episode of Braves Today, if you want to go check that out later. But Jose Suarez is probably going to get DFA'd in 3 weeks when Spencer Strider's back, and nobody's going to say a word about it. Nobody's going to care, right? Just kind of wild stuff over there. Did I miss another acquisition in the East, or did we cover everything? Oh, Kyle Gibson to the Orioles.
Yeah, that's what it, yeah.
Kyle Gibson to the Orioles, that was on Friday, 1 year, $5.25 million. He can get another $1.5 million in bonuses for starts, up to 24 starts. This is just, we're grabbing all these guys that are, at this point, we're grabbing all the guys that have put up innings, have not been spectacular, but have put up innings. That's fine. He doesn't help with your main problem, right? Like, we didn't help with your main problem for the Orioles of this is not a good rotation.
Yeah.
He's another back-end guy in a rotation full of threes and fours and fives.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're spot on. You're spot on. He's another Chad innings eater. He's going to go out there and he's going to eat those innings and not look great doing it, but he's going to bridge the gap from the start of the game to the bullpen. And it sucks, man, that Baltimore did not do anything this offseason to just improve that rotation in any way. And it's they needed a guy like Kyle Gibson, especially with I think Grayson Rodriguez is starting the year on the injured list. And so it's they needed that, but they needed so much more and so much more talent in that rotation, and they just don't have it.
Yeah. All right. Moving to the AL Central, news for a bunch of these teams. The Twins said Brooks Lee will not be ready to start the season. Somebody did the math on this. I had this in our Discord, by the way. 18% of the players on the Twins 40-man roster have gotten injured during spring training.
Wow.
What are we doing, man? 18% of the players on the Twins roster, 40-man roster, got hurt during spring training. So that's fun. I don't know anything else on that. That's just a wild stat. But there's a bunch of outfield news in this division. The Tigers are signing Manny Margot. It is a major league deal. He was released by the Brewers on a minor league deal, surprisingly, right? He went from a minor league deal with Milwaukee to a major league deal with the Tigers. They're having Parker Meadows and Matt Vierling are both going to be on the injured list. Margot is a right-handed bat, so it kind of makes sense. The Royals acquired Mark Canna from the Brewers. We've talked about one of the big issues with their outfield is that the corner outfielders were bad, right? They tried to get Adam Duvall. He didn't want to come over there. MJ Melendez has struggled after converting from catching. Vinny Pascantino left a game this weekend with a hamstring issue. Canna's played both first base and outfield. This feels like a much bigger deal. He was also in a minor league deal with the Brewers. Mm-hmm. This feels like a kind of maybe a surprisingly big deal. He'll make $1.4 million, has to be added to the 40-man roster by Thursday, but I like that move.
Yeah, I like it too. Because we've been banging that drum all offseason that the Royals, their biggest weakness is their outfield, especially in the corners. And so adding Mark Canna, while he is, you know, pretty up there in age, it could work out well for them. I don't think he's going to have the home run power at that stadium that we have seen from him in the past. But just adding a viable offensive bat to the lineup in the corner of the outfield is just going to be a little bit better for them in the long run.
He only hit 242 last year between the Tigers and Giants. Numbers have been heading down. He still walks plenty, but against lefties the last three seasons, he's batting 258 with a 419 slug. So, like, if nothing else, he's a platoon option against lefties. If you like the matchup against a righty, you can throw him in there. I think it's a good move. And then the Guardians. So the Rockies are weird, man. The Guardians and Rockies made a deal. The Guardians are getting Nolan Jones, the outfielder, back from Colorado in exchange for Tyler Freeman, the infielder, outfielder, whatever. So, like, Jones debuted with Cleveland in 2022 and then was traded, like, the end of that season. Was a 2020 guy in, I think, 2023 and then struggled in 24. He had like back issues and stuff like that. And now he's back in Cleveland. I love this deal for Cleveland because this was very obviously a buy low on a guy that you can pinpoint a specific issue why he struggled last year. And the year before that, you know, even when you're counting in the fact he played half his games in Coors, he hit 297 and was a 2020 guy. While doing the outfield corners in first base, if you can hit 20 home runs, you're like the greatest power hitter on that Cleveland roster.
Yeah, I like this move too. I think I like Nolan Jones going back to Cleveland. I think it kind of, if it works out the way everyone expects it to, it'll kind of make up for the lack of offensive production from Andrés Giménez. Not that it was much offensive production, but it was still a little bit better than they've gotten from everyone else, but Jose Ramirez and Stephen Kwan. But I do like this move for Cleveland. And again, it's the standard MO for the Colorado Rockies to trade guys for peanuts and then wonder why they are consistently in the cellar of the National League West.
Yeah. It's just, it doesn't make a ton of, like, I understand the idea of Freeman's a good defender, right? He's like a career 83 WRC plus hitter. He hit like 209 last year. He can play center field, shortstop, third base, second base. Great. You have a center fielder in Brenton Doyle. You have a shortstop in Ezekiel Tovar. You have a third baseman in Ryan McMahon. Like, it doesn't reinforce your it doesn't fix your weaknesses. All it does is reinforce the strengths you already have. You have Gold Glovers at short and in center field. Like, what are we doing? Makes no sense. And then Nolan Jones helps the Guardians a ton. This is a great move. I love this for them. Super confusing there. Did I miss anything else prominent in the... Oh, no, Tanner Bibee. The Guardians extended Tanner Bibee over the weekend. This is the time frame for that, right? This always happens in the end of spring training. He just turned 26 years old. It's a five-year extension with a club option for 2030. His salary's $3, $4, $7, $10, $21 million for the 5 years. And then a $21 million club option for 2030. He gets $48 million in guaranteed money. And this is with 2 years of service time. This is the third highest amount of money given to a pitcher between 2 and 3 years of service time. buys out all his arbitration years and one free agent year. I love this deal for both sides. I think Cleveland is getting what could be a very good pitcher at a below market rate. He's getting plenty of money, and he has the ability to get to free agency while he's still in his prime and get another payday. I think this is a great move for both teams.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree completely because, you know, he's a career 325 ERA guy. And even though it's over two seasons, it's not a small sample size. It's over 300 innings. So, you know, yeah. he's done very well. He's got a 128 ERA plus for his career. And I agree. I think this works out well for both sides, especially because it does lock up all of his prime years. Though he was under team control, it still locks up all of his prime years at a premium price plus one more year after one year of his free agency. So I think it's going to work out well. And there's one of those teams. I don't think I'd put them on the same level as the Braves, Astros, and Rays, but they're up there as far as teams that can develop pitching.
Yeah. Let's stay in the division real quick, try to wrap up the Central here. The White Sox claimed Rule 5 pick Mike Vasile off of waivers from the Rays. He was a Mets prospect. The Rays took him. You have to pass a guy through waivers before you can send him back to his original club. The White Sox instead claimed him. They now have the Rule 5 requirements they have to follow all year for him. But part of the reason they had to claim him is because Drew Thorpe is having Tommy John surgery. You sent me this text. This is what, the fifth pitcher this winter?
Sixth.
The sixth pitcher this spring. To be announced to need Tommy John surgery out of White Sox camp.
Yeah.
Just absolutely absurd. Like, there are pitching injuries happen to everybody, but holy cow. The sixth pitcher announced to need Tommy John surgery. Absolutely wild. I don't necessarily, it's probably just bad luck. I can't figure out what they would be doing to cause that. But holy cow, what a string of bad luck for the White Sox. A team that's already pretty bad.
Right, yeah. They've got a black cat or something living in their stadium because they just can't catch a break after being the worst team in the history of baseball last year, and now this year having six guys since the start of spring training need Tommy John surgery. It's just insane what they've been going through the past stretch.
Yeah. All right, we touched on the West a little bit when we mentioned the Rockies and the Angels and those trades, but there is some interesting and kind of actually a little bit scary news for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Mookie Betts is he is still trying to recover from that, whatever that issue was he had, that illness that he had when he was in Japan. He is reportedly, he's down to like, what, 157 pounds and hasn't been able to hold food down since before they went to Tokyo. You know, this is Mookie Betts was listed at 5'10, 180. So he's lost 23 pounds off of his listed weight. This is the kind of thing that's going to take a good part of the season to come back from. Like, he may get back on the field, but we can't expect him to be the Mookie Betts that we knew until at best the second half of the year, right?
Yeah, it's not good. As you said it in the lead up to this, it's pretty scary. I feel bad for the dude for real, because I mean, I can only imagine how much that sucks, had not been able to keep food down since before the Tokyo trip, and they left for Tokyo not this past Friday, but the Friday before that. So it's been
it's been like 2 weeks now.
Yeah. And so that's just awful, man. But yeah, no, if he does get back on the field this season, then yeah, he's not going to be near the same guy. I don't even think he's going to be near the same guy even in the second half of the year. I think that this is at the very least, this season is going to be a lost season for Mookie Betts. And it's pretty late in his career too. He's in his 30s. So it's not good. And I don't know, man. That's scary. I know he's undergoing a lot of tests and stuff as an athlete making millions of dollars, but I feel like there might be something pretty bad going on. And so I do feel bad for the dude. It sucks.
Yeah. It's just, you never want guys to not be able to play for reasons out of their control, right? And we just want him to get better. Like, that's, there's no funny video clip here. There's no like Dodgers hate. It's just Mookie Betts get better. That sucks. Baseball's better when guys like Mookie Betts are on the field. And in the meantime, now you've got an interesting, like, does this help Andy Pages stick on the roster? Because he needs to play center field while Tommy Edmonds at short. Like, how do you configure the roster? There's baseball conversations to be had. And those are obviously secondary to the health of Mookie Betts. But there is strategic questions that the Dodgers have to figure out now about how they configure the lineup and the defense without Mookie Betts for a while. The sad thing is, as much as I hate to kind of say this, the defense might be a little bit better with Mookie Betts not being at shortstop, as terrible as that sounds. But again, you're now Tommy Edmonds having to play short instead of center and moving guys around. It's obviously not ideal. And this is terrible. And obviously we want Mookie Betts to get better first before we worry about the Dodgers and how they're doing. The Mariners did a really interesting money thing, right? They released Mitch Haniger despite him being owed $15.5 million this year. He signed a deal with the Giants, a 3-year deal with the Giants prior to 2023. They acquired him via trade in the Robbie Ray deal. And he hit .208 last year across 120 games and 400 something plate appearances. Career high 29.8 strikeout rate. And he was bad enough where they had to go out and trade for Randy Arozarena and Victor Robles. Or I guess they signed Robles after he was DFA'd by the Nationals. Ended up extending him. And then he hit .167 in spring while competing for the DH job with Mitch Garver and Rowdy Tellez. Is this it for Mitch Haniger? Do you think somebody maybe brings him, like, offers him a minor league deal? He's 34 years old. He's not been good in the majors in like two seasons or something like that. Do you think he gets offered a minor league deal, or does he latch on to someone's roster between now and opening day?
No, I think 2024. I think 2025 is kind of out of the question for him this year. It might be a minor league deal at the best, but I don't see him being on a major league roster this year. But I do think we see him again next year. Just give him a year off. Give him a year off from the major league grind and clear his head some and get his head back right.
And get right and then try it again.
Yeah, but I don't think we see him in the majors this year.
I wonder if a team like the White Sox, like, they signed their starting outfielders in the corners, Michael A. Taylor and Travis Shanikowski, they signed both of them during spring training, right? They just cut Brandon Drury, by the way. I wonder if maybe rather than like a Travis Shanikowski or something, or rather than carrying a guy like maybe an Austin Slater on the bench, that they go and they offer something to Haniger and see, like, hey, we want to start you in the minors to get you ready and then call you up. And it's one of these NRIs has a short leash and they see what they can do. But yeah, for the most part, I kind of agree with you. I think they're going to end up being, I think he's going to end up at best a minor league deal and probably in the minors all year. So much news. Is there anything that we missed off of this from this weekend?
Oh, real quick, I do want to Brandon Drury. What's crazy about them cutting him? He was hitting like .417 in spring training, and they cut and they released him.
He was too good.
Yeah, he might help them win a few games. They want to re-break that record they just broke last year.
I think I saw it. He suffered a thumb fracture recently, and he has an opt out, so they would have been forced, I guess, to put him on the roster and then put him on the IL and pay him while he couldn't play. So rather than letting him exercise his opt-out and leave, they just cut him. Still weird, though.
Yeah.
To your point, weird. He was hitting really well. He would have been able to help you when he came back. So I'm thinking about some teams that, like, could use a second baseman or a third baseman that might just throw him on the, like, sign him after opening day so his salary's not guaranteed, and then throw him on the IL, the Brewers maybe. They're thin at third base. The Astros, now that Altuve is a left fielder, they could use somebody for second base, like, to give them extra depth. I know. The Yankees are thin at third base. They could throw them on the IL and then bring them up. The Twins have had so many infield injuries. The Mets are missing some guys. Like, they're looking for a right-handed hitting infielder now. Yep. And if they do find one, Luis Angel Acuña is going to start the year on the in AAA. So, like, I could see any of these teams grabbing him on a like a minor league deal, throwing him on the IL, and when he's healthy, putting him on the major league roster and helping them out at third base. But kind of wild to your point that he hit, you know, 410 and he got cut. But the best ability is availability. You can't play, then it's hard to expect them to want to pay you to sit there in rehab.
No, you're right.
Although he does still get all of his medical expenses covered. Like let's clarify that. He got hurt playing for the White Sox. He does still have access to all of the doctors and the rehabs and everything. He's just not earning salary from them. They do still cover all of his medical expenses while he's rehabbing the injury. Just kind of clarify how that works. They are required to cover that for him.
Yeah. Another team that could use some bench depth, the Philadelphia Phillies. They could use the bench depth, and I wouldn't mind having Brandon Drury coming off the bench for them. Second base is locked up, especially if Bryson Stott stays healthy this year. But defensive replacement in the late innings for Alec Bohm at third, that sounds mighty nice to me.
He's also pitched a little bit, and he's played some outfield. I mean, as recently as I want to say it was 2022, he played a little bit of outfield, but like he's played outfield as well. So like a late innings replacement for somebody if you need to, you know, Nick Castellanos, cough.
Max Kepler.
When he's
healthy.
Yeah, when he's healthy. So a couple different options there. Eastern news, I think that we missed. I don't remember if we talked about this or not. Gunnar Henderson will start the year on the IL. Did we cover that?
I don't think so.
How big of a deal is it to get like that? They need to get him back, right? Like this is they're hopeful it's a short stint. Kind of a reminder here. This is the intercostal strain. He missed 3 weeks of spring training. First IL stint of his career. Mike Elias, general manager, said that they're hopeful the IL stint will be measured in days instead of weeks. Mm. But they've got to get him prepared for the season, get him at bats and things like that. The IL stint begins today. So his first activation date is April 3rd, the end of the first homestand of the year against the Red Sox. He's taking batting practice. He's fielding ground balls. He's taking live BP, but he's not actually been able to play in any sort of games since the injury. Do we think, given what he's already doing activity-wise, that he's back by early April?
I think it's closer to mid-April, really, with the intercostal strain, because that's a tough one to come back from for any player, especially hitters who are. We talked about it whenever he first got the injury. He's twisting consistently, like multiple times a game, and so it's tough to come back from. And it might work out in the long run, you know, because he struggled down the stretch last year, I guess, from fatigue from being his first real season of playing a full 162 games at the major league level. So in the long run, it might work out. It might keep him at that high level throughout the rest of the season if he starts a little later, but no, it's I think it's going to be closer to mid-April, maybe even early May at the worst case scenario.
There we go. This has been a loaded episode of First Pitch. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when we drop that next episode. Maybe also leave a 5-star review. And coming up later this week, we're going to give all of our picks for awards, division winners, World Series, and all of that. So stay tuned for that. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.